everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Freelancer Show. This week on our panel, we have Brad Large.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Joel Schobert.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Charles Max Wood from DevChat.tv. And this week, we have a special guest, and that's Tess Ball. Tess, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi there. Thank you guys so much for having me. I am the founder of the Heart Driven Business Academy. I've been in marketing for 12-ish years, I'd say, and I've been a small business owner on and off throughout my life. So I've kind of married those all together to provide education to small business owners.
Most front-end developers and web designers would like to earn a side income or freelance full-time, but they don't know how to get started, how to price their services, and how to get clients. Kyle from studywebdevelopment.com has been freelancing for over 5 years and had to figure it out and learn on the go. He created a practical bundle to help others interested in freelancing, which has been downloaded by thousands of people with great reviews. The bundle not only provides you with the necessary templates to get started, but you'll also learn about earning a side income, getting clients, growing a freelancing business, and much more. You can get 20% off the complete bundle with the coupon code DevChat at studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing. Awesome. And we connected on LinkedIn. It was interesting because we connected over podcasting and then started, you know, mentioned that you do marketing, automation, business systems. I'm like, well, dang, let's have you on the show. So it seems like marketing and especially marketing automation, you know, all the business systems, things like that. That's something that most freelancers that I talk to struggle with. You know, right. We're pretty good at doing whatever our clients pay us for. We're pretty good, hopefully, at sending invoices and getting paid for it. But finding new customers, that's always the challenge. And before the call, I said, so where do we want to start? And you said, well, that's what people ask me all the time is where do people start? So yeah, if you're a freelancer and you've kind of gotten in, you've found a few clients, but you're not really sure where the next client's going to come from, where do you start?
Yeah, so I think this is going to vary individual to individual, right? Like we all look online and we see these like five Instagram hacks to get your ideal customer in your door, or like six easy steps to make your first $100,000. And while that would be so nice if that worked, right? We would all love that magic bullet answer, but it really depends on what you're working with, who you are, what you like, who you're trying to connect with, and what you can control. I always like to start with what I can control. Oftentimes we see, you know, go ahead and put out some Facebook ads. Well, it's not really easy to control that. Go ahead and do XYZ. And it's five steps from where we're at. So I like to look at like, what do you have in your toolbox? How do you naturally like to meet people? How do you like to socialize? How do you like to spend your time? Do more of that thing, but do it in a way that's going to get people in your door. So if you love going to parties, go network. If you love sitting behind your computer, figure out how to sit behind your computer and do the thing.
That makes sense. It's funny because we're the consultants. So the it depends answer is supposed to be our answer, not your answer. But
haha, sucker.
Right? So that makes sense. You know, I talk to people about their careers, you know, building careers in software development, and it's the same thing, right? It's like, figure it out. Do you like to write blog posts? Do you like to record audio? Do you like to contribute to open source? So yeah, I mean, this really does boil down to what your preference is, but how do you figure out what that is? I mean, people in a lot of cases, including mine, especially when I got into freelancing, it was, that wouldn't have helped me much. Because it would have been, kind of like whatever I like, right? And I don't even know which of these really applies to me.
Sure. So being in marketing as a freelancer for a long time, we like to sometimes break it down into media types. And the framework of owned media, earned media, paid media, I like to go there. And what that means is, you take a look at your owned media first. That's something like a website, a blog, a landing page, a funnel, a podcast, things that you have full control over. I also really appreciate Stoic philosophy. And so what that does is it's like, okay, what do I own? What do I have full control over? if, you know, Facebook got destroyed tomorrow, I know we all hear that, but you know, if what you're putting out doesn't resonate, or if the algorithm changes, whatever, like, don't worry about that. Worry about what you own. So once your house is in order, once your website actually converts people into leads, once your landing page is actually getting people to click the sign up for my email offer, once your email list is converting, then you go onto your earned media, and that's stuff like relationship building, stuff like networking, stuff like cold outreach, stuff like social media. That's all stuff that it takes a little bit of elbow grease to get some buy-in. It's kind of like your circle that's like one step removed. You focus there next. And then that third option is paid options, like, you know, your standard advertising. So that's how I like to break it down. And if you're a writer, make a list of all your owned media sources. What do you want to do? Make a list of all your earned media. How do you want to put time into developing relationships? And then maybe you hit the paid media later. It's kind of a brain dump.
Yeah, it is, but it gives you a place to start, right? It's okay. What do I control? You know, back to that thing, you know, it's, yeah, what do I own? Where can I start? And so, yeah, it's what do I already have, you know, and can I set up a website? Can I easily take some of these steps? And yeah, from there, then it's okay. Now, how do I start working with people to get people over to the place that converts?
Yeah. You have to have a destination. You have to have a place for people to land, whatever that looks like, right? It could be a simple one-page landing page. It could be, you know, an email form, a Google form. It could really be as simple as you want to make it. You just want to make sure that wherever people are being sent, they're moving through the process. Because otherwise, you're just wasting your money on networking and it's not clear where people are going to go.
Yeah, for sure. I think that a lot of times that I've seen marketing efforts get derailed by the fact that they don't have a goal. Like, they don't have an intended consequence or intended action for the customer client to take. So they get caught up in all the strategy and tactics. But at the end of the day, when you ask them, well, do you want them to share your content? Do you want them to give you a phone call or email you? And they're like, oh yeah, that's a good, that's a good question. I hadn't thought about it. Do I want them to email me? Do I want them, you know, that was one of the first things that I did. I looked at some of the things that are going on and I want a phone call. Like, that's my outcome. So I tailored my content to funnel people to the phone call. Right. But when you do these, all these different types of channels and efforts, if you don't have that focus on what does your ideal customer going to resonate towards or gravitate towards, and what do you want from that relationship, then how do you get there? Right.
Yeah. All marketing has a value exchange, right? What do you want to get and what are you giving? And you have to make that clear. If you're expecting people to put those pieces together themselves, you're going to miss out. You have to know, what do I want my people to do? And what am I going to be giving in return? You have to own that relationship, lead that relationship. You're the business owner. If you don't manage that, nobody else is going to do it for you.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too. I mean, again, just figuring that out. I mean, how do you know, how do you get down to, I want them to sign up for my mailing list, or I want to have them give me a call, or I want to have them fill in the lead form. I guess you could try the different methods and see what works, but a lot of people don't even have enough experience to know that. Right.
Right. And I think oftentimes a lot of folks jump into this freelance business without realizing it's a business, without realizing that when you are in business, there are systems to be created. There's a flow that you have to manage. And a lot of us are just winging it, and there's beauty in winging it. But when you learn to systematize your efforts, things become a lot easier, and you have to start somewhere. So if you are inclined to get people on the phone, create a system for getting people on the phone and start there. Pick one thing. If you want people to engage with you via email, create a ton of marketing that gets people to engage with you via email. But start somewhere. Your process can evolve. It can grow with you over time, but pick something. Start somewhere. create a system around it, because you can always modify your systems.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing that ties people up, is it's like, well, if I build this whole system around phone calls, and then it turns out that phone calls, yeah, it's not a permanent decision, right?
And right, so, it can always change.
Well, the other thing is that your content that drove them to give you a phone call can easily be adapted to getting them to fill in a form or email you or whatever else, right?
Right.
The things that get their attention don't necessarily tie to into phone call or any other medium of connecting, right?
You can always replace tactics with other tactics. Mm-hmm. You have to get a flow down, a communication flow, because that's the thing you're really working out. That's the thing you're really experimenting with. How do I manage the communication? You can plug and play tools, tactics all day. Do you want to schedule your appointments via Calendly or Acuity? It doesn't really matter. Do you want to use MailChimp or Constant Contact? Whatever, it doesn't matter. You can always interchange those things, but nailing down how that flow works, that's the important piece.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting on my end of things. I mean, I've been looking for podcast sponsors, right? So that's kind of my area of things. And what's really interesting about that is that when I started the podcast network 10 years ago, well, not quite 10 years ago, so it was 8 years ago. But anyway, when we started out, initially it was just, I would email people and they would email back and we'd set it up and I'd get paid, right? And the podcasting world has changed. And so I've had to adapt, right? And so I've been updating my systems and doing the outreach, which is how we connected. I think I did a search on marketing or something. And then, you know, you got a message about podcasts. And yeah, so it has to adapt. It's not just that it's going to adapt. It has to adapt. And as you're figuring things out, you're going to have to experiment anyway. So what kinds of things should I be experimenting with in order to maximize as a freelancer the effectiveness of what I'm doing?
Can you say that question again?
So what kinds of things should I be experimenting with in order to maximize the effectiveness of my system or funnel or whatever you want to call it?
So data, I bring everything back to data. I'm one of those folks, and I'm imagining some of your audience, it also falls into that camp. There's a place to wing it, and your experiment can look any number of ways. But what I like to do is I like to pick one piece of data. Experiment with getting that piece optimized and then move on. So what that could look like for me, say you want to make sure that the people who land on your page convert. So that anybody who's coming to your website through any number of outreach methods, you want to make sure that people who land on your website actually do the thing that you want them to do. So you measure one of your CTAs, one of your call to actions. Over time, you make sure that that piece of data is performing well, and you create your experiments around that piece of data. Once you know that that's in order, maybe you add in something else. You're like, okay, for every 10 sponsorship opportunities I reach out to, I want to close 2 of them. So you start tracking that piece of data. And then you're like, okay, so now that both my call to action on my homepage is nailed, now that my, you know, outreach is effective, I want to create some efficiency in the system. And so you start layering on whatever matters to you. And if you don't know what matters to you, get a coach. Talk to people in your industry, help figure it out. But I like to go with the numbers because they don't lie.
I think one of the things that I kind of looked at with when I started out was how to pick something, right? Like what am I going to go with to measure? And I was experimenting with a few different things, but I couldn't really nail down like the channel I wanted my content to be on. So I did like videos, blog posts, and split the difference there and tried to figure that out. But what I realized by doing both of those was that I enjoyed doing video and I could automate the process around it. So I kind of started gravitating towards that. But what I liked about it was that the one metric that I had, which was, you know, getting people to reach out to me or get to my, like at first I had a couple things, then it was just phone calls. I just measured how effective am I at getting somebody to schedule a call. And once I did that, then I realized there were pieces that I didn't have to spend time and energy on. I could just focus on that one thing. So it's interesting that that's your, you know, a takeaway of yours is just focus on the data and that measurement. And because once I started doing that, I mean, some of the other stuff took care of itself. I didn't have to keep updating my blog as much because I could just get my customer journey. I call it a customer journey, right? When I talk about the path that my potential clients would take, well, they're going to come to YouTube. They're going to search. They're finding my videos there. So if I can successfully, you know, write some copy or write something that entices them to go to my website by giving them some value there, and then enticing them even more with a value proposition to call me. And I didn't make it necessarily the easiest process, but the people that did reach out to me were, you know, good leads. So I just focused on, you know, that one thing. So it's interesting because I guess I kind of just stumbled on that.
And that's beautiful. It's beautiful because you're right. It does help you simplify, clear out some of the clutter. We as humans have a tendency to overcomplicate everything, right? We're like, I'm going to do the blog and I'm going to do the YouTube and I'm going to get people to email me and call me. And when you really hone in on like, okay, I have this one thing I want people to do. I'm going to measure my YouTube videos against it. I'm going to measure my blog against it. You're able to see what's working, what's not. And that data point, it just has to be one. It does not have to be complicated.
You know, what I like about your approach, Tess, is that as a technical person working with my clients, I tend to work with very small entrepreneurs who have so much going on that they tend to have very little time left to know anything about the software side of things. So we end up explaining very basic things. And this idea that there is some sort of architecture behind it, and you have this website and it does some things, and at some point there's some logic and it goes to a database, and then you've got data there, and then people come and look at that and maybe make some decision from that. That's a pretty common scenario in any informatics type systems, and that one kind of architecture fits with all those. What I like about what you're doing is for someone like me, since I tend to get a client that lasts a long time and then get another client that's often word of mouth, I know very little about this space. Probably as little as my clients know about my space. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you can paint this picture of an architecture of different channels that have things that are owned, earned, and paid with some CTAs in them, some call to actions, and then they're trying to make somebody, get somebody to do something. I can almost start to picture like the kind of picture I'd be drawing for my clients to explain how a system works.
Yeah, it's, and as we were speaking and I saw your hands moving, it is visual. If you are a visual person, as I think a lot of folks in our industry are, it's really easy to see. You have column A, column B, column C. How do you get those people to do the next step? It's a flow chart, right? If you have these different kinds of media, you put them into the flow chart, what comes next? Oh, you want them to do a specific task. Once they do the specific task, they go map it out. If you're struggling with the words of it, with the ethereal nature of marketing, right? It's not always so like tangible, visceral. Map it out for yourself. Get out a piece of graph paper. What comes first? What comes next? What comes last? What is that sequence? It's not that different than programming.
Yeah. The thing I like about it too is that we do testing in software too, right? And so just having a test, does this get this, you know, because I'm thinking about my sales page for sponsorships, you know, and we could be doing the same thing for my sales page for freelancing or anything else, right? And it's, okay, so, you know, how many does it convert, right? If I have 10 people come in, does it convert two of them, right? If I have 100 people in, does it convert 20 or 25 of them, right? And if it's not, then I can experiment with that and I can work on that, right? And then I can, you know, while I'm running that test, then it's, okay, well, how am I getting people here, right? And so then I can, you know, Brad was talking about doing blogging and video, right? And so I can say, okay, well, I'm going to put up 3 videos and 3 blog posts for the next few weeks. and see which of those can, you know, come into the page and convert better, right? And so I can run the tests one piece at a time. And, you know, and then it doesn't feel like this big, because we're talking about this system, right? But the system is made up of these little parts that are very tangible and testable. And that's what I'm liking out of this, is that it's like, okay, I just need to know what the numbers are and then see what I'm doing that improves them.
Yeah. And it's going to take some time, much like anything you're testing. It's not going to be next month that you have all the magic answers. When you test these components individually over time, you'll get some really solid answers, but just know that it takes 3 months, 6 months, a year to really dial in every piece of this system so that it's running on autopilot, so that you can stop worrying about your freaking marketing.
Yeah, this is great. I think this is at the crux of, like, for me, where the big gap is to leap as an engineer, technical person over to this marketing mindset. Just as you two guys were talking, the whole idea in an engineering system or software system of designing something that would move from working 5% of the time to 10% of the time, that's not something we generally do. When we make a website and it's supposed to do a certain thing when you press this button, it's supposed to work nearly 100% of the time. And all our tests try to get it there. If someone finds one case where it doesn't work, that's a bug. So this idea of now we're going for a statistical definition of success, it's a really big mind shift for an engineer.
Yeah, but that's, we really do it with performance anyway, right? I mean, if you're writing a website, you know, it is a different mindset even for performance testing, right? But mm-hmm. for the website, it's the same thing, right? It's how do I optimize my code so that it'll run faster, so that it'll be more efficient, so that it'll connect to these other systems better, so that it, you know, so that my query into the database is more efficient, more effective, you know, so that the queries come back more quickly and things like that. So we do it. But yeah, generally we're starting with just the correctness, and the correctness is mostly 100% one way or the other.
If you have a client, you have 100% correctness. Now you just have to, you know, improve the efficiencies of your systems. Like, if you have work, just give yourself the carte blanche, okay, the system works, and move forward and think of it like, okay, how can I optimize the speed? How can I make the system more efficient? But like, it's working. If you have work, it's working.
Early in my career, I figured out which jobs were worth working at and which ones weren't, mostly by trial and error. I created a system that I used to find jobs and later contracts as a freelancer. If you're looking for a job or trying to figure out where you should go next, then check out my book, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. The book walks you through figuring out what you want, vetting companies that meet your criteria, meeting that company's employees, and getting them to recommend you for a job. Don't settle for whoever has listed their job on the job board. Go out and proactively find the job you'll love. Buy the book at devchat.tv/jobbook. That's devchat.tv/jobbook. One other thing that just comes to mind with a lot of this is that I've had people come into a system, you know, that I've either met online or met at a conference or things like that. And as I get to know them and build a relationship with them and things like that, that eventually is what converts them down the line, if we're looking for that point where they kind of change over from one to the other. And we all do this as human beings, right? So, you know, Brad's my friend, Joel's my friend, Tess is my friend. Well, how are we friends? Well, I learned that if I talk to people about these specific things or in these specific ways, or I tell stories, or, you know, I connect on these levels, that, you know, people like Tess are going to want to be my friend, right? And so we do that. And I think there's a little bit of that, that generally, if as we engineer systems, we kind of leave that out, right? Because we're just trying to get an engineer a system that's reliable. But the reality is if you bring this other piece in and you bring your humanity to bear, right? And you start talking about who you are and why you do what you do and why you like to do it and what the payoff for you is, and they kind of see that other piece of you, that is as much this whole process as anything else. The difference is that, yeah, for some people they're going to identify with it, and other for other people they won't. But, you know, again, it's all part of the same system.
As a freelancer, you have to be a human and you have to market to humans. As soon as you take that piece out, it's not going to work anymore, right? Like, customer service I wish there was a better name for it, but your customer experience is everything. If you don't fulfill that, no amount of marketing you do is ever going to make up the difference. So absolutely be human. And that brings up a really good point too. What are the people that you're working with saying about you? What are the conversations you're having with your existing clients that really excite you? And you'll start to notice these opportunities for quote unquote marketing. Yeah, we connected because you reached out and talked about, let's talk about podcasts. I love that stuff. If you notice that when you're human and you open up and you reach out to people and you're like, oh, as soon as I start talking about this thing I love to do, people resonate with it and then they come to me, mm-hmm. You hit gold, but you kind of have to throw those pieces out based on who you are.
You can experiment with that too, right? I mean, I could have just as easily sent a Star Wars message or something else that I'm really a fan of, right? And look for people that had that other thing that I could connect on. And that may be where you start to bring people in. So it can be anything.
Yeah. I'm definitely more on the introverted side and was completely insecure and very nerdy most of my early adulthood even. And I treated even my socializing like this experiment, right? Like, okay, when I talk about this, what do people resonate with? And it's amazing when you stop that judgment, you're like, oh, my marketing can't sound like this, or I can't do outreach like this. I couldn't possibly put myself out there in this way. When you treat it as an experiment, all of a sudden there's like very little judgment. You're like, oh, I'm just testing numbers. When I send out 100 messages about podcasts, 100 messages about Star Wars, and 100 messages about dog videos, and I notice that like the podcast messages really connect with people, great.
I want to see Joel experiment with TikTok, dancing on TikTok.
You know, here's something interesting about this whole thing. This idea of it's a little bit of a numbers game, and just doing the one thing you've always done may not be enough if you've just been too conservative. You go experiment and try some different things. You were saying, Tess, you even did that with conversations with people, trying to figure out if I talk this way about this thing, what resonates. And the idea of adding enough variation to get some feedback from everything around you as to how you're really connecting and when you're not connecting, that idea is fascinating. And as long as you're willing to try some new things, it doesn't have to be super hard.
Precisely.
I don't know if it'll be on TikTok though.
I'm pretty sure you'd get some leads from your TikTok dance videos.
We've been talking a lot about like experiments, right? And as I was getting started, I tried blogging about certain subjects and I would do these experiments and I'd run different content pieces. But one thing I really, really struggled with was spending time on something that I felt like was ineffective and wanting to move on to something else, but then also making sure that I gave enough time for that to be effective and to see some results. So do you have any guidelines on like timeframes for testing this stuff out? Like if you're doing video versus blogging, like we'd said, what's a good time frame to really know that you're giving it enough time, but not shorting yourself on other efforts?
Right. I think so. Here's how I look at it. I am a rock climber. And every time I get onto a particular route, I want to make sure that I'm consistently moving forward. If I slip once, okay, cool. I get back on the wall and I try it again. But if I notice that there's this downward trend, I pack my stuff up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try a different problem. So the time frame, I wish I could give you like, okay, try something for 90 days. But I think what's most valuable, because every experiment you run is going to be different, start to look for trends. If you get month over month growth, keep going. If you get, you know, 6 months of growth and then you have a month where you start to slip, try picking it up again. But if you start to see a downward trend or if you start to hate what you're doing, pull the plug. Certain platforms take a little bit longer than others. So I would say if you're adding something new, give it at least 3 to 6 months to see what's happening. You're not going to get success with anything in, you know, 30 days, but start to notice those trends. Does that help?
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. I think the platform specific, there's a lot of nuance there. So I'm glad that you spoke to that because I hadn't really thought about that when I was asking the question. But so for instance, like when I did YouTube, I was terrified to do video, but I started doing it because it seemed like the cool thing to do and I could automate a lot of stuff around it. So I started doing that, but I did see growth there. So then I was like, okay, well, and that's kind of one of the things that, but there were other avenues. Like when I was blogging, I would change direction if I didn't see growth for a while. So it's good, but like blogging can take a lot longer of a time frame than posting on LinkedIn. If you're doing direct outreach on LinkedIn and you don't get results, you know, at least some people hitting you back in a couple weeks, you at least tweak your tactic there, because it's pretty tough to not get any traction on LinkedIn in a couple weeks. But you know, as far as actual clients, it may take longer, like you were saying. There are definitely different lead times for different platforms. So
can I ask a question here too? Oh, go ahead, Joel.
You know, I really like this idea of measuring whether you continue to go on by whether you're still having a feeling of moving forwards or going backwards. And I also rock climb, which I find interesting. But for me, that wasn't my first sport that I got good at. And I was not an athlete in high school, didn't play any sports, was not coordinated. And then the first sport I really excelled at was bicycle racing, probably in my late 20s, early 30s. Had an actual coach, followed a plan, and learned what it took to get really good at something. And after that, if I knew what that felt like in one sport, I could tell in another sport how if I was moving forward or not. My guess would be if it's your very first time doing any channel in marketing, you might feel kind of lost and not have a real good guideline for whether you really are moving forward or not, or what the time frame should be.
That's a really good point. Anytime you're putting yourself out there in a new way, it, at least for me, it feels really awkward. I feel like I'm wearing just like this jacket that doesn't fit right. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands. It's easy to get lost. And if you rely on your feelings about it, it's going to be extra confusing, which is why I look at data. Forward movement can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Sometimes it means like you have more, say you're tracking your time. And you realize that creating, doing your LinkedIn networking takes you 5 hours 1 week, and then the next week it takes you 4 hours, and then the next week it takes you 3.5 hours. That could mean you're creating some efficiency in the system. That could mean forward progress. For others, it might be, you know, the first week, 80% of my LinkedIn messages get read. And then the next week, it's like 85% get read and replied to. So pick the metric, whatever it is, that helps you feel grounded, that helps you feel like you have something to latch onto so that you're not feeling so lost. And it doesn't have to be any prescribed metric. You get to make it up, but pick one. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great.
One other thing that I'm wondering, though, because Brad asked, you know, how long do you keep going with your strategy, right? It could be, you know, I'm going to connect on LinkedIn. I'm going to connect on Facebook. I'm going to connect on this other thing. I'm going to do blogging. I'm going to do video. But it also, it feels like there are other variables, right? I'm talking about this particular aspect of what I do, or I'm answering people's questions in blog posts, or you know, so it could be the content, it could be your approach to the content, it could be the actual content strategy. So how do you evaluate those kinds of things?
I think in order to know if something specific is working, so that you know, like, okay, now it's time to change a variable, you have to throw it out there enough times to get some data, right? It has to be like almost statistically significant. And so I would say, like, before changing an approach on your outreach, throw out at least, you know, 20 or 30 messages to see what that feedback is going to be like. If you're trying to find sponsorships, email at least like 15 of the same stock email, if that's what you do. Or an email in the similar tone so that you know, okay, is this working? Because you don't want to, like, every email you send out, you change. Because then there's really nothing to measure. You don't want to throw it all at the wall and see what sticks. Try to have a data set that is, that matches what you're trying to measure. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. Again, you just start putting it out there. You see what clicks, get feedback, keep moving.
Sometimes putting it out there is the hard part too. Like people make content or come up with different plans, but then they underestimate or I not underestimate, they overestimate how much it's actually getting out into the world. And that can be a big difference maker. If you're really not getting your message out there, if you're not posting enough on LinkedIn or, you know, uploading a video regularly on YouTube, then, and you're not, you know, promoting it. And that can take time, right? When I started doing videos, I did videos, but then I started cross promoting on LinkedIn, Twitter, and different platforms to get it out there more. So taking the time, I would say that's very important, taking the time to make sure it's getting out there in front of people, because otherwise the data you have is going to be very limited anyway, right? If it's like you were saying, take enough time. If you're doing an email, make sure you do it at least 15 times to get a good data set, right? That's a similar thing, making sure that you're not overestimating how much you're putting it out there. And there's also a huge tendency I've seen for anybody that starts creating content to feel like they're flooding the market when really they're not. Especially LinkedIn, social media platforms, everybody's really sensitive. What if somebody sees my post twice? Nobody's going to see your post twice. More than likely, it's not going to happen. And if they do, they're just going to scroll on the feed. They're going to forget that they've already seen it, or like that's the thing, right? And so it's very interesting to me, but that was kind of hard for me to tune in, was how much am I actually getting my content out there? And making sure that I was getting good data out of that, right? Getting it out there enough to get good data from it.
Yeah, Brad, I love that you mentioned sometimes the hardest thing is putting yourself out there initially. And then what if I'm overwhelming people? That's so common. And we as humans are wired, like we hate rejection. We hate feeling like we're a burden. There's a ton of like very, very human fears that go into marketing, because it's like, it's being visible, it's being vulnerable, it's showing up and knowing that there's a possibility that somebody's going to unsubscribe from you. It feels a lot like rejection. You feel it in your soul and it sucks, because your business, it's not really separate from you. When you're a freelancer, you are your business. And it's so easy to take that stuff to heart, take it personally, take it as a reflection of your services. One thing that really helped me out a ton, I had a writer back in the day. I was so scared to put my ideas out there. And being a designer, like if you play it safe, it really isn't going to work. If you're in a creative field, you kind of have to put yourself out there. And he's like, okay, Tess, the idea time, let's go. And because of who I am, I wanted to have the best ideas ever. But what that did was open me up to the possibility that the worst ideas might be the best, that the ideas I thought were going to be awesome didn't really have to perform. It allowed me to look under the surface and see, okay, what are all of my options? And it eliminated the fear. So if you're like, oh shit, I'm really scared to put my video out there, or I'm nervous that I'm going to oversaturate the market. Okay, shitty idea time. What if I put my message out on LinkedIn 18 times? Fail big, fail quick, get out in front of your fears so that they don't eat you from the inside.
I'm just trying to decide where to go from here, because there's so much here. And I think people have a lot of ideas. I'd be curious to know from our audience too, like what kinds of things are you trying? You know, what is the craziest or stupidest or, you know, most effective thing that you've done? Because I find that, a lot of times it's the, oh, I didn't even know that this person was this kind of whatever, you know, because you did that crazy thing and, you know, that's what connected with people. And sometimes it's just out there being a straight up expert works. So who knows?
I think a lot of us are afraid to be an expert. Like, it's scary to put yourself out as an expert because, one, we all are struggling with imposter syndrome. Like, there's not, like, we're all winging it, right? And so to put yourself out as an expert can be terrifying. And then there's also this component of like the fear of success. Like people are afraid of that visibility. Like when you're an expert, you have to live up to your title. It's also freaky. And so I think this whole notion of just having shitty ideas, permitting yourself to put it out there. I love that you touched on being an expert as like something radical or wild, because oftentimes it is. That's the scariest thing of all.
That's one of the things that as I put myself out there and tried to build authority or expertise and build this like kind of aura around me of professionalism. Actually, I built that into my, subtly built it into my branding with professional enough. So I am just professional enough. If you deal with me, I try to be a normal person, but I also want, you know, if I say I know something, I want to know something about it. And I might know a little bit more about it than the average person, right? At least. But it is a huge struggle when you're trying to figure out where you fit in the ecosystem of professionals and authority figures, right? As you're building something that, like you said, if you're a freelancer, you're the company, you're the brand, and it's you, it's your face. So it is very scary, and there's a lot of uncertainty. And the hardest part, I think, for me has just been to build the discipline needed to kind of fake it till I make it, right? Like that's been, so far I haven't hit situations where I've been extremely uncomfortable, right? But I'm sure that it'll happen at some point, right? So that's a scary thought thinking forward to that moment. I don't know what I need to know. But in the meantime, I'm just having fun meeting people and you know, trying different things and trying to put myself out there and trying to help people out. And I think it comes back to the idea of marketing as an exchange of value, right? And as a freelancer, I think that if you're just trying to provide value to people in the ways that you know how, you're going to attract the people that need that value, right? If you're putting that value out there, then those people are going to find it. And I still can't believe it works sometimes. But I cannot believe that people find my YouTube videos. Like, I just can't believe it. I know we've had the internet for a long time, but this still amazes me. So I just think it's cool.
I think your videos, yes, they're probably valuable. I want to go on your YouTube channel and take a look now. But also this idea of being professional enough is valuable. There are a lot of people intimidated to work with you who, through watching you be professional enough, they're like, oh, he's relatable. He makes me feel at ease through this process. So I think value comes in a lot of forms that you might not even realize. Like, your value extends beyond the code you write. Your value extends beyond the service you provide. Your value is how you make people feel through your experience with them. That's so valuable. Just being professional enough, it's actually a perk. It's not a negative. It offers more by being a little bit less.
Have you heard of Atwood's Law? He says that anything that can be built in JavaScript eventually will be built in JavaScript. And that includes mobile apps. You can build awesome mobile apps and Apple TV and other apps with React Native. Come check us out every week as we talk about some of the ins and outs of building mobile apps with JavaScript and with React on React Native Radio. You can find it at reactnativeradio.com.
So Tess, we've talked about like a lot of different pieces here. And so we've talked about, you know, some things like you and Brad are just talking about positioning, seeing him as professional enough and kind of this image. And this is the persona I want to put out there. And then what your value is, what you're giving to other people. And then you can set that out there through different channels. Brad's got like lots of videos and instructional things out there. If you were starting from scratch and had nothing, and a person came in, I heard you talk about goals, and I'm imagining like if my goal was to have someone pick up the phone and do an hour talk with me or something, is that really like the right place for someone to start who has nothing?
I think the place you start is by deciding on what you want, which is, I think, the hardest thing. So many of us, we start businesses and we don't even know what we want. Do you want to create $100,000 business? Do you want to create a, you know, $500,000 business? Do you want to do this on the side and pay for your kids' college? Like, what do you actually want? Is where you start. And then you assess, what's the gap between where I'm at and that place? And you can fill that gap with any number of marketing tools. But yeah, I think the very first thing you have to do is know what you want, what the thing you're trying to create actually is. And it can change, but you have to start somewhere.
Great.
I think that's interesting. I have this theory that I've kind of developed, and I don't think it's 100% a blanket for everybody, but I think in service-based businesses or freelance style businesses, that there's like this idea of building trust with an audience, right? Once you define that you want, yeah, I think that it's interesting. Defining what you want is incredibly difficult. And it's one of those things that even after you do it, it can change, but sometimes you almost tie your identity to a piece of what you want. And so it can become this like big existential crisis if you do want to change it. But, you know, as I look at this, like once you determine what you want, if you're just starting out and you're not really sure, but you want to make some money, then I've found that there's like this kind of trust factor that has to be built. And one of the things that I've told, you know, friends of mine that want to start a business or, you know, I say, just go like really think about what skills you have and who could benefit from those skills and then go meet them, right? Whether it's a place or, you know, getting them on a phone call, I think is like, especially a video call is second best to meeting them. And right now there's a great opportunity for you to be lazy and not have to go out there in the world. And like, you can actually invite people to video chat and they don't get weirded out now. So that's cool. But I mean, that's a barrier. Once you get that trust, start building that up and looking at the channels in which you can build that trust quickest, you know, video calls, phone calls, those things. I mean, Chuck gets this all the time, but our first conversation, I was like, Chuck, I feel like I know you already, man. I've been listening to your podcast for forever. Right.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah. And it's because there's so much trust built up over that medium, right? Just hearing his voice. I mean, I literally drove to work with Chuck every day for like months. I mean, it was crazy, right? But so thinking about the ways that you can build trust, I wouldn't disagree that picking what you want out of it is definitely the hardest part. But if you're trying to get started, the things that you're going to ratchet up to that trust factor, those are the things I think that you're going to find your biggest ROI. Especially initially. And you don't need too many systems in place to have phone calls, which I like. But the other thing that I tell people is to get a website up, because we talked about algorithms and other pieces. And some people are like, do I even need a website? Or why don't I just do a LinkedIn page or a Facebook group or whatever? Well, you don't own those, right? A website, you can own that. So you can change hosting, but that's your home base, right? And so having that and having it be less affected by algorithms and things like that. And you can take that and distribute it on other platforms as well. But I really think that once you figure out what you want to do, building trust with potential clients, that's the next big challenge. And we often don't think about it. We think get clients, right? But building that trust is paramount to that.
Yeah. And building that place that you own, building a website or a landing page or something simple, but something that you own, that you have full control over that experience. Because the second you rely on LinkedIn for your customer's experience, you no longer control it. And you have less likelihood of building trust because it's out of your hands. So I like that you mentioned build a website, build some sort of destination so that when you do your outreach, whatever that looks like, people have some place to land and it feels like you and it looks like you and they can begin that process of trusting you.
I think that's a good place to wrap up. But yeah, I love it. And yeah, I do. I have people reach out to me fairly regularly asking about, you know, or just because they know me and they have a question and they trust me. And, you know, I haven't really monetized that per se, but I mean, this is something that I talk to people all the time is, you know, I talk to people and they're like, well, I don't know if I want to sponsor podcasts. I'm like, well, do you want to do one? And that whole idea, right, is that I'm creating this place where my customers can come and get what they need. And then they have a place to go, right? They have that, you know, maybe it's a Facebook group, maybe it's a mailing list, maybe it's something else, but it's something, some place where I can go and be with them. And I can make those kinds of connections. And ultimately, yeah, it comes back to my website and we do some kind of business. But yeah, you know, there's so many opportunities out there. And if you're the expert, especially in this day and age where so many things are virtual, and most of our listeners are going to be people that provide services that can be done virtually. Yeah, I mean, there are so many great opportunities. Tess mentioned, I think, before the call, something about, you know, having a customer that's like a dental clinic or something. My dad was a dentist and, you know, and I had him blogging for a while and it's funny because, you know, if you don't live outside of Utah Valley, you're probably not going to come to him as a dentist, but he'd get contacted by people outside of Utah saying, my son or daughter is coming and they're going to go to, you know, one of the universities nearby, BYU or UVU. And, you know, I'd like to get them in for an appointment, and it worked out. And, you know, again, it was just that easy thing, right? His phone number was on the website. And so it just made that easy connection. And that's what we're talking about here is just creating these spaces, these places where people can go and find you and then leading them down this process to the point where they give you a call or send you an email or get on your mailing list. You can send them the marketing message so they can come buy from you or whatever. All right. Well, let's do some picks. Joel, do you want to start us off with picks?
I will start us off with picks. So right now we're in that period of our history where everybody's going through the social isolation. So it's hard to find things to get out and do. And just last fall, a little before it started, I've switched from a hardtail mountain bike, 15 years on that, to a full suspension. And when I started, full suspension bikes were awful. They were so springy. They were very inefficient. So I just ignored them. And I went on a ride with a bunch of people who were extremely fast. And they were all 10 to 20 years older than me. And I like, something isn't right here. And they were all riding this brand, this Pivot brand of mountain bike. And I picked one up used last fall. And it has been fantastic. It is literally so fun to go on the trail. I now feel like I'm just carving, like I'm skiing through all the kind of twisty trails up here that we have in Minnesota. So my pick this week is mountain biking in general and my new Pivot bike in specific.
Nice. Brad, do you have some picks for us?
Yeah. So I actually just set up an online course over the last 2 weeks. I just decided to do it finally, and it took me about 2 weeks of part-time pushing things together, but I got it set up and I used Paul Jarvis's a link that I found from Paul Jarvis where he basically teaches how to set up the course using WordPress site and a few plugins. And I had the tech set up in like an hour and a half, and that's because I had to take a break to help my kids with something. So it was ridiculously easy to get all the pieces set up, and it wasn't too expensive for the plugins and stuff like that. So I would highly recommend, if you're looking at what it, you know, even if you're just interested in what setting up a course would involve from the tech side, then I would highly suggest reading that article because it went really smoothly for me. And on top of that, I'm trying to think, I think that's about it. I did have to get a webcam, but it actually really stinks. I had to get a webcam for an online proctored exam and I would not pick it. So I'm a little bummed down about that. So I'm open to any webcam picks.
Nice. I've had this one for so long, I don't even know if they have this model anymore. So, yeah, I've been working on getting some course content together as well. And so I'm going to make two picks. One is something that I am working on launching. I believe I have a landing page up so you can go and actually, I'm pretty sure you can go and actually sign up to get notified when we get stuff out. It's called Codeineer. And what I'm working on there is way back in the day we had Railscasts. Anyway, people have done this format where they have a video that comes out every week that they offer as a premium offering. And sometimes they have like free one and then a paid one every week. So I'm looking to do something like that, except what I want to do is I want to build the platform for developers and then allow them to essentially subscribe to the ones that they want. I'm going to offer both audio and video offerings. So if you go to Codineer, that's codineer.com, you can get on the mailing list, the launch list for that. I'm also looking for authors. So if you are a developer and you have that expertise, I would love to get your input on that and see what we can pull together for that. I'm kind of toying with the idea of doing something very similar for either SaaS founders, but I haven't quite nailed that down yet, and for podcasters. So if you're interested in that, the podcasting one's going to be at podsurge.com. And yeah, I'm working on those. And then I have courses related to the podcasting that I'm going to be launching soon. And some of it's going to include some of this, some of these ideas just for podcasters and marketing your podcast. So working on that, but yeah, codineer.com. Initially I was just going to do audio on Codineer, but I've talked to a lot of people and they kind of want both. So that's where we're going to go. So I'm just going to do one self promo pick there, I guess, and let Tess shout out about whatever's keeping her sane during the quarantine.
Well, what's keeping me sane is not necessarily my pick. I'll be launching a podcast on Thursday. It's Tuesday now.
Sweet.
And yeah, I'm super excited about it. Shitty Idea Time podcast. If we're doing self promotion picks, but I really wanted to talk about was Elitu, which made it really easy to put all your segments together. As a non audio editor, Elitu was really, really helpful in helping me just plug and play all my different segments. So I would highly recommend that service.
Elitu,
A-L-I-T-U. Made it super duper easy.
I'm going to have to check this out. I mean, we have editors, but I'm always looking for things that I can share with other folks that make it easy. So,
yeah, because I do not have editors. I am my sole editor, and that sucks.
Yeah, I don't edit my shows anymore. I didn't enjoy it, but I've got some top-notch folks that love doing it. So, all right. Well, Tess, if people are listening to this and they're like, you know what, why don't you do this for me? How do they get a hold of you?
You can find me at TessLorraine.com, TessLorraine.com. Or if you want to take one of my courses, I have founded a collaborative education hub for business owners, freelancers, the HeartDrivenBusinessAcademy.com. So you'll get a little bit more of a self-guided experience.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for coming and talking through this with us.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Charles, for having me. Appreciate you guys for the conversation.
All right, folks. Till next time, Max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.